Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. And today I am rejoined by my friend, Jenny Claridge. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Jen.
So today we are going to discuss how credible our jury system is, how reliable our jury system is. And based off what we know and understand, certainly based off this, and when we see more of this in, you know, from the jury series, would you want to be sat in front of a panel of lay people off the street and be judged if you were a victim and you reacted?
No,
I know I wouldn't.
No, I definitely wouldn't either. Definitely wouldn't.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was full of... I mean, the first thing that literally hit me when at the start of every single episode, when the series, when they were, you know, introducing the different members of the panel, was the excitement. It was like, oh, this is juicy, this. And that I found very worrying.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the attitude. And I know, okay, I'm going to correct myself there, because actually I've seen, certainly of late, some family court lawyers, certainly on TikTok, who it's very, very evident it is a performance to them. They love the performance. They love to perform, and they're not seeing this as, well, this is people's lives. This is like, you know, a theatre to them. And that approach is very, very attractive to a perpetrator. But the vast majority of people who work in this space, they don't show up to work every day thinking, oh yeah, this is juicy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just don't. I mean, you know, there's my friend tagged me into a thing in Manchester similar to a breakout room, and similar sort of thing to what we've watched, but in a less formal setting, where's members of the audience, people sat in the audience, and then on the stage they are basically doing like a stage version of a courtroom, so to speak. And he said, oh, do you fancy? I'm thinking, no, I don't, actually. Because I can't show up to something like that in the mindset like everybody else is showing up in. Because, and seeing as we evaluate cases all the time, I can't sit there and just do it for as an enjoyment day out.
The thing is, I think, like, true crime certainly now is really sensationalized, isn't it? And I don't feel a lot of people do reflect upon the cases as if these are real people.
And that's fine, you know. There's no harm in people, you know, being the armchair detective, if that's the right term for them. But keep it out of real life cases. Keep it out of real life cases. This is just we can't be doing this. It's just not good enough. You know, we saw bias coming in.
misinterpretation of the law based on, people's own perception of it, because they didn't quite understand, what the law was that they were having to kind of follow.
I mean that support worker who was specializing in domestic abuse, I can't do it to her. I want an acquittal. Well, you can't do that. You can't take that approach.
I think jury service is incredibly tough on a lot of people who go and do it, and can be, very triggering. I know we talk about, some people who get that excitement from it, but I think, there's also people who are going to be sat there who are going to find it really, really difficult and triggering. And, I just.
I think from what I observed is it started off as walking in there very naive as to what was going to be discussed and presented to them. What started off as excitement ended up being rather triggering to a lot to a number of them. Some of them were in tears. Some of them were quite traumatized by what they were shown, and not only that, but traumatized by the way the other members of the jury were treating them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
If they didn't agree with something with their opinion.
It was hard to watch at times. It really was. I wanted to actually throw my cup of tea at the telly when I was watching it. Effing and blinding I was, I can tell you.
Oh my God, it is. It's and I think so. There's a number of things here, though, isn't there? There is how reliable our jury system is. Considering, and I think you've said they've changed. You said they've changed it to are you sh you've got to be sure. Are you sure,
Are
as
you
opposed to
absolutely
beyond reasonable
sure?
doubt? Whereas, so. It defeats the whole purpose of handing it over to untrained people if we're requiring them to be sure. If we need them to be sure, I mean, even beyond reasonable doubt, we need them to have multiple hats, understanding of the law, understanding of behaviors
The
and behavior
evidence.
analysis.
The evidence, because I found a lot of the evidence wasn't understood. So I found that they were talking about the facts in, air quotes, of the case, when actually the facts that they were talking about weren't actually facts. And so, I did find like a lot. So I feel like there was a misunderstanding of what was actual evidence as well.
You cannot rely on somebody to come to a verdict, a panel of people to come to a majority, unanimous verdict, without. I mean, even with a panel of experts, it's very difficult to get a unanimous outcome verdict.
And even with a panel of experts, the likelihood that you'll get a perpetrator on there is quite high as well. And like, because
Well,
even
it is, but it's, but we also have that risk with lay people. But at least we know we've got a chance of them applying, putting their professional hat on. We've got a stronger chance of them doing the right thing than we have of lay people. It's too much of a gamble in my eyes. I stumbled across. I haven't really been following it, but I Google. It came up on my stream on TikTok this morning. Lucy Letby's case, and it's looking like this is going to be going for a retrial, because the witnesses and some of the evidence wasn't even relevant, apparently. Well,
There's a lot with
I'm
that.
sorry, but this is somebody's life. If they have, it turns out that this has been a monumental failing between Cheshire Police and CPS Northwest, there's going to be uproar. I mean, that means that poor, that girl, that young girl has been put in prison for all this time for. And you know what people are like when it comes to children. You know what they're like. We hear it time and time and time again. When it comes to children, people automatically bring in bias and opinion. So the jury will have looked at her.
Even if she were to be let out, for instance, and they realize that actually that was an unsafe conviction,
Yeah.
she's got that for the rest of her life. There's always going to be people that aren't going to accept that. She is,
No.
that's it,
There
isn't it?
are. There's going to be people that will have already formed an opinion, no different to what we're talking about with the jury system, and nothing you present to them is going to change their mind of that they have of her, and she'll be stigmatized for life. She'll never recover from it.
No. Yeah, so I mean,
I mean that is just like. I've just got no words, to be honest with you. And we know what they're like within institutions like the NHS, and the do it happens within the police. You know, if there's internal failings, they close ranks and they cover up. And
And it does sound like this is what has happened in the Letby case. If I'm being completely honest, from this,
yeah.
I've sort of like listened to a lot of stuff around it, and it does sound like there is a lot of that going on.
Yeah, because apparently she wasn't a very she was she wasn't that long qualified, so in theory she should never have been left unsupervised.
No.
Oh, she is she if she wasn't left unsupervised, well then there wouldn't be this air of suspicion or speculation if somebody else was there.
I think there was a lot of other stuff involved, like as well. I think Lucy Letby is like a whole different episode, to be honest.
But it does. I mean, because I mean, like we just said, you know, with things like that, you know, people are certainly when you're dealing with children cases where, you know, children have been killed, you know, people emotions automatically get in the way, and that's why people like that in prison are they know or straight away they're not safe, even from other prisoners. They have to safeguard them inside because they know that. That's a fact. So that alone, with lay people as a panel of jurors, is going to influence that verdict.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, season one where they had two jurors, you saw that very, very clearly with the two different verdicts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. By definition, one of them is wrong.
And the verdict that came back as murder, actually, like initially there were more people who weren't leaning that way. They were leaning sort of more for manslaughter,
They were
and
influenced.
just the way it was influenced and changed, based on loud voices putting across their opinion on what the law was and what the facts were. And yeah, I think people just felt bullied. I think that's probably one of the worst or main things about this system. If they want to con to if we have to continue with that kind of model, there definitely has to be an adjudicator in that room. Like
100%.
they can't be left to
No.
their own devices. I just can't get my head around that.
No. And the fact that, you know, nobody gets to see what goes on behind those closed doors is absolutely it's diabolical. I
Well,
mean,
they say one of the reasons for the way we do it, the jury system that we have, is for transparency,
there's
and
no
fairness.
transparency.
And it just, to me, that where's the transparency? So you pick people off the street, okay, but nobody can see how they've made that decision. Like, would you want Wayne and Wayne at a slob, like deciding your future? Come on, like, I don't, you know, I don't, I
No. No. Really.
don't.
I mean, it's that ridiculous. It is laughable. If it wasn't that serious, I mean, it's like, what on earth? Right, we're just going to break for a short interval and we shall continue this conversation when we get back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. The other thing that I wanted to cover is the emotional well-being of the jurors as well. I mean, I know, you know, we can't, like us, you know, we're in this space, you know, we are survivors, and we know how triggering it is listening to cases. When you're constantly exposed to it. Now,
trauma is
but we are going into this with our eyes wide open. We're not going into it with any level of naivety. Being just a general victim, survivor of domestic abuse, as an example, or a crime that is similar to what you were about to sit in front of and have evidence shown to you, and read out to you, you aren't necessarily mentally prepared for reliving what you have gone through. And I mean, we saw it with one of the juries, where she was a survivor of domestic abuse, and her ex had held her over a balcony and said, "If I can't have you, then nobody else will." Well, and I know she was saying, "Well, you know, I experienced that and I didn't react the way she did, and so I don't think it's fair or reasonable that she reacted the way she did." So not only was that bias coming in based off how she didn't respond in a similar situation, but how do we know that she was in a stable enough place of mind within her nervous system to relive those events? We don't. And this
That
is
can
why
be
I
the
think.
same with anyone on the jury, can't it? Like, even if they haven't even been through something like that, if they're being shown,
Child, if they've got child experiences, maybe, you know.
or if they're being, if they're being shown photographs of a, a violent murder scene, or hearing details of sort of child abuse or anything like that, that's gonna, that can really, really affect like
Yeah,
anybody, can't
yeah.
it?
I mean, it can. But if you've had lived experience similar to, which is going to be in that person's mind, that we know how the brain operates. The brain doesn't know what's real and what's not real. When it's hearing back evidence that may replica and mirror a past lived experience, the brain will think we're back in that danger zone. So this is why it is absolutely crucial, I think, for them to not just do DBS checks to make sure they're not allowing known criminals in as part of the jury. They need to be making sure that, if there's a known history that they have lived domestic abuse, and this is a domestic homicide case as an example, I don't think it is responsible for an untrained individual to be put in that situation. I don't. Based off how we know how the brain operates.
I mean, there definitely needs to be some kind of prepping for sort of really serious cases, doesn't there? Pulling people off the street and going, here, look at this murder scene, look at this, is, yeah.
It's no. No, it's highly irresponsible in my book. I mean, it's hard for us sometimes, but we're walking into it with our eyes wide open because we've trained for this. They haven't trained for this.
No. And even being trained, it took a lot of inner work as well, and like sort of like healing to be able to do that. It's not just about the training, is it? Like the sort of academic training or side of it. It's about the emotional side of things and that healing from that trauma before you can kind of step into things like. And yeah,
And
it's
it's an ongoing, you have to look after your nervous system on an ongoing basis. This isn't just like I'll do it, do a one hit wonder, and then that's it, I don't do anything else. This is an ongoing thing. And this is what I've always said to, I mean, obviously I've engaged quite a bit with Cheshire PCC, and I've said this repeatedly, they have to take care of their officers' well-being. They have to. Because they are being exposed to trauma every single day in their work.
I do think people forget that police are human beings who have like the same feelings and thoughts as the rest of us.
So we've got a situation where, they may react out a character and react unreasonably to something that was maybe quite minor on the grand scheme of things. We have to take into consideration what has that person been exposed to over a window, a window of time, or over a substantial amount of time. We have to take that into consideration because just because that is their role doesn't mean that they are immune to trauma responses. Oh, there's a lion there. No, we do. We stand firm, and we do not get scared. And we are. I mean, it is ludicrous to even suggest that. And that is trained people. I mean, I'm using that term loosely as well, as we know. But this is even worse when we are relying on expecting lay people to be put in that situation, and there not be any fallout. I mean, it is dangerous and reckless of the court system, of the government, of everybody who's responsible for this, for continuing this. I don't know. It's a flipping joke, to be honest with you.
So, I mean, the question is, like, what can be better, really, isn't it? What would be the best way of trying cases so the verdicts are safe and not unsafe? Because at the moment, I believe, after seeing those two series of the jury, that there is going to be a lot of unsafe convictions out there, and a lot of people who have probably walked free who should not have.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
what's the answer?
And I mean, obviously, there's lots of cases that we could, could rhyme off. But, just going off what, the two things that we've covered in the past few episodes, which is the jury, and that everybody can go away and watch that if they wish, and see exactly what we're talking about. On jury on the season one. There was two separate juries that saw the exact same evidence. Now let's just put to one side, what our views are, which we've already said what our views are on the other episodes. By definition, one of those jurors were wrong. One came up with a verdict of manslaughter, when the other one came up with a verdict of murder. By definition, one of them is wrong. The same with season two. Obviously, there's only one juror, but the outcome was actually murder, and the rerun of this trial was manslaughter. Well, by definition, one of them is wrong. So if one of them is wrong, that means we have potentially, again, let's put to one side mine and Jen's views, potentially we have a young mum who is in prison for life, and it's a miscarriage of justice.
And potentially for the first season, we've got a guy who went to prison, spent 3.5 years in prison for manslaughter when he should have been in there for life.
So, when we're looking at it like that, this is exactly what we're talking about. It is a lottery. Now, for something that is always been viewed as beyond reasonable doubt, and obviously now they're saying you have to be sure. Based off that, are we standing by that analogy? We're not. We're not. There's no way that if we can have two separate jurors come up with the two separate verdicts, that we can be sure that there's no miscarriage of justice.
People weren't sure though, were they? Like when they were coming up with
No.
those verdicts, there
No.
was a hell of a lot of, I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure. I'm just
Yeah.
not sure. And then obviously they were bullied into certain, verdicts that they weren't sure of.
Well, before we go into what the solution is, we're going to break for another interval, and then we shall discuss what we think the outcome, the solution is. See you in a minute.
The station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. So, the solution. I know you've got up on your screen, haven't you? Your other screen. What other countries are doing? Do you want to just read those out for us, Jen?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a few sort of like different systems that are going on around the world. So, you know, like France, they have juries of 6 or 9 jurors and they sit with 3 professional judges, and then they decide on the most serious cases. Some like Germany, instead of a jury, lay judges serve on a panel with professional judges. Some countries don't have jury system at all. It was outlawed in India, apparently, in the 1960s. So I suppose you have to wonder why there. And then Spain, juries are used and are provided with a list of specific questions regarding the evidence and the defendant's guilt. And Japan, they adopted in 2004, they use a mixed panel of 3 professional and 6 lay judges for major criminal cases. I quite like the idea of there being a panel.
Yeah.
I do quite like that idea.
I mean, I have, and I've submitted it, and I'm hoping it's going to be approved and published, is to get an overhaul of this, in a petition, through a petition, and where it needs to be ideally a panel of experts, from various different professions, from psychology, neuroscience, criminology, criminal law, other trauma-informed experts, who, you know, work with victims and perpetrators. I think it needs to be a panel of experts, professionals that are trained and trained adequately and who are trauma-informed. And I think it needs to be more of a case of a fresh set of eyes, a fresh set of eyes on the findings that CPS have come to, to see if there's anything that they've missed, and for that panel of separate professionals who have not had any involvement in that case to discuss it and then come to a verdict whilst taking into consideration what CPS have come to a conclusion of.
I think prosecutors do a lot of work though as well, don't they, around, you know, when they're sort of like presenting a case, they do a lot of sort of fact checking and things like that as well. So it's sort of not just CPS, but it's kind of that sort of side of things as well. I know Nasir Afzal, he was the former chief crime prosecutor. He mentioned about a system where people are paid for, say, like a year or something like that, And then in that year, they have a, like training, sort of like writing law and all the various different sort of elements you need to be trained upon. And then they attend lots and lots and lots of different trials, in that time. You know, that could potentially be good.
I mean, what would be even be a better solution what we currently have is having students in their very in those very various different fields in their final year. And as part of their getting their degree, they have to do so many hours on jury service. That would be a better process than what we currently have. And it would be great experience for the students. But again, provided they have to be supervised and supported. So if we don't want to bring in and bear the costs, which is, let's be honest, that's what it'll boil down to is costs, then that is a better option than what we're currently, well, than the model that we've currently got.
I think one of the biggest issues for me is just the people that, you know, the way it's done at the moment is the lack of understanding of the law, how it should be applied in that case, and the not understanding of evidence and what is evidence and what isn't. So, you know, with whoever's sitting on that jury, they need to know the difference. And that for me is one of the, obviously, you know, you've got all the biases and that like feeds into their opinions and forms their opinions around what is evidence and fact. But, you know, I saw a lot of stuff being spoken about as fact when it actually wasn't.
And this is goes back to why it's so important to have multiple. They need, this isn't a, unfortunately for cases like this, and we talk about this in regards to family court cases. For high risk cases, you cannot be one trick pony, unfortunately. Just relying on your bog standard law degree isn't going to cut it on a complex case where there's high risk. And it certainly ain't going to cut it when we're dealing with a domestic homicide case. They are out of their depth a lot of them. They are ill-equipped. They think that, oh, I've got my degree, and you've got your degree, but has your degree covered X, Y, and Z? If it hasn't, you're not equipped at all. That's what it needs to be standard in the degree courses. It has to be.
It's a tough one, isn't it? You know, I think, like I said earlier, you know, one of the reasons that they, you know, that we do this kind of model is for transparency and trust. And so, like, you know, not a single unelected judge is making the decision because, you know, you don't know what he's going to be like or she's going to be like. So the solution certainly has to be something that, you know, the majority of people are going to be comfortable with. And I think it's going to be a really difficult thing to, you know, come to a conclusion to, really.
You definitely need a panel of experts. I know if I was ever in that position, I wouldn't want to be tried and by a bunch of lay people. I wouldn't. I
No, I
would
will. I absolutely
want
will.
to be I want to hope that my fate was in the hands of a panel of experts where we have a fighting chance of people understanding the background of a situation.
The background, the evidence,
Yeah,
the law, you know, those very important puzzle pieces.
I mean, goodness, Jen, I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about it because I can't talk too much about it, but just look at my case. How many failings were there on my case? And that was with CPS. Supposedly, the people who are supposed to be the people who know all when it comes to proving beyond reasonable doubt.
And
And
this isn't the, you know, it's not the first, it's not the last,
no,
it's constantly happening.
exactly.
I see it
So
all the time
if
in
this
my
can
life.
happen with professionals, what chance have we got with a bunch of lay people? And this is why it needs to be, it needs I we need eyes, a lot, several professional eyes over serious cases, like over serious cases we do. It's too there's too many moving parts. You know, trauma responses are not black and white. How the brain operates is not black and white. Coercive control is not black and white. So when you've got so many elements that are have so many shades of grey, this means you require a really high level of skill. You cannot get by on surface level knowledge.
And it can't be a popularity contest either, because
Oh.
you know things like that do alter the course of certain cases.
Yeah.
I mean, just for instance, and I don't know if you watched it, but the Caroline Flack documentary,
No, I didn't know.
when the police, one particular police officer fought for her to be charged on that occasion, and it was very clear that if that was anybody else, they wouldn't have pursued that charge. And it was so clear. And then, yeah, and then she was up doing court. And well, we know what happened.
And
So,
this is exactly why, you know, we have suicide rates that are as high as what they are, because it's not just the perpetrator that is the, that is a risk of is accountable for people having thoughts of finality towards themselves. It is the system that compounds that inescapability. The system acts as a level of uncertainty, that unpredictability to a person's safety and future, and they need to be held accountable as well. They have to understand every decision, everything they say carries consequences. They have to understand that.
what a world it would be if everybody could wake up just knowing that the good would will be protected and the bad will be punished, you know, accordingly. What an amazing world
It
that
would. It would. It would.
would be. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I
Yeah.
suppose we can hope.
Well, thank you, Jen. Again.
No, it's been really, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And, you know, please, I mean, hopefully I will have these various petitions that I've got waiting to get published. Another one is in regards to similar what we've just been discussing, which is it's actually my knowledge saves lives petition, which is basically to make trauma-informed training mandatory across the board. I know that there's talks after the Claire Throssell's petition success with getting mandatory training into the family court, but that's not necessarily going to be trauma informed. But we need trauma informed training across the board, and we're talking social work, we're talking healthcare, we're talking police, education, the works.
And proper
Proper, yeah, proper. Proper,
proper
not saying
trauma-informed
trauma informed
training.
is not, oh yeah, I understand somebody's distress and I understand they're anxious. That's not trauma informed. Being trauma informed is not sitting on the end of a phone being empathetic with somebody. Being trauma informed is understanding what would drive certain behaviours.
And it's not
What
diagnosing people with personality disorders
exactly,
after they've
yes.
been harmed and
Look
abused
at the
enough.
symptoms, the conditions that they are living and navigating, that's influencing their behavior. And that goes for the perpetrator and the victim.
It's also not letting them get away with those behaviors.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. Again, people think being trauma informed is being empathetic. No, you're being trauma informed by viewing a perpetrator's behavior through the correct lens. Look, 10 out of 10 for observation when people say they've got mental health problems. Of course they have. That's why they do what they do. You've got to look at that information and use and take it to help you identify what's driving the behaviour, what's their motivation to behave in that way. That's what it means to be trauma-informed. And that's why trauma-informed even applies to the perpetrator. So, yes, it's a buzzword that people like to throw around, isn't it, Jen? And it's certainly one of my biggest bugbearers.
You can't pathologize and be trauma.
No. No. I mean, it's like, you know, Gemma Smith. I mean, Gemma's been on as a guest before. Gemma's one of the survivors of the Bradford grooming gangs. And Gem went to prison for 2.5 years for stabbing her perpetrator, who basically in what was essentially self-defense. And because of everything else she's been subjected to, which obviously understandably would cause her to be her nervous system to be more on the ball and more responsive and reactive, they've labelled her as a sociopath, bipolar, and having antisocial personality disorder, aka a psychopath. Now, she can't get a job. She's labelled as a walking liability. And
that hurts me.
In reality, and I know Gemma very, very well. I have many, many conversations with Gem. And Gem is, she's got complex trauma. Is she a risk to anybody? No, she's not. If you put her back in a situation where she's having to operate from survival and she's fighting for her life and fearful for her safety, will she likely respond in that way? Possibly. But you make sure her environment is safe and she's with a safe partner, which, funny that, she's been with the same partner for years. She's got 3 more children. And guess what? No more incidences.
Yeah.
Who would have thought, eh? But yeah, that's not trauma informed. That is not trauma informed. So we shall thank you for listening, and we shall see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specialising in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.